Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Eating Disorder Awareness Series Conference. Today's event is being recorded. I'll turn the conference over to Ms. Kate Harner.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for calling in to Cigna's 2013 Eating Disorder Awareness Series. My name is Kate Harner, and I'm a care manager on the Eating Disorder team at Cigna. Due to the format of the call today, you'll not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of the conference, you will be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback on your experience in today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions of today's speaker. A handout for today's presentation is available online at www.cigna.com/eatingdisorders. Halfway down the page, under the heading Current Topics, you'll see the link for today's presentation in blue, entitled Battling Our Bodies, Understanding the Impact of the Media and the Diet Industry on Our Bodies. Again, visit the Awareness Series webpage online at www.cigna.com/eatingdisorders. Halfway down the page, under the heading Current Topics, you'll see the link for today's presentation in blue, entitled Battling Our Bodies. Please also notice the blue square in the top section of the webpage that you may click on to sign up for seminars. It's not required that you sign up in order to attend the monthly presentations. However, if you choose to sign up, you will receive an email reminder for each month's presentation. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Nicole Hawkins. Dr. Hawkins is the Director of Clinical Services at the Center for Change. Today, she'll be sharing information with us on the impact of the media and diet industry. Welcome, Dr. Hawkins.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's nice to be here, and thank you for everyone that's called in to listen. And I'll just tell the audience a little bit about myself. I'm a licensed psychologist, and I've been here at the Center for Change for 14 years. And another fact about me is I've been recovered from anorexia and bulimia for 22 years. And when I lead all the body image groups at the Center for Change, and so what I'm going to present to you today is just a little bit of a snapshot of what I work with our patients on, their families on, and then I also speak in the community and nationally on the media and body image. So if you're able to access the PowerPoint, you can start with the first slide of what I'm going to be talking about, and on that slide it's entitled Battling Misperceptions. And I'm going to be talking about the power of the media, the diet industry, and the prevention of negative body image. And if you're able to view the slide, you can see a woman that it's hard to tell what the picture is, if it's a picture of a model, if it's a picture of a patient. And the sad truth about it is a modeling picture, and I think it sends such a confusing message to young girls about how they're supposed to look and what's healthy, especially when they see these kind of images in magazines and, you know, on television and that. So if we proceed to the next slide, I've been looking, and of course you can go on the CDC's website and other websites and see the average size of American women and how things have changed, but currently the average woman in the U.S. is 5'3.7", so some people are feeling pretty tall right now because I think we think average women are much taller. But if you look at the average weight of an American woman now, it's 164 pounds, and the average woman wears a size 14. In fact, two-thirds of all American women are a size 14 or larger. And again, if you go in our shopping malls, if you go in our stores, that's really not reflected in clothing stores, where the average model is now 5'11", and weighs 117 pounds and wears a size 2. Now, to ask you how many women in the world can actually look like that, it's only 1.8% of women in the world can look like that. But researchers estimate that we see that image 80 to 90% of the time in print media. Of course, on television, actresses are usually not that tall, but kind of body proportion-wise, they're thin. And researchers have actually been looking at the average American woman versus the woman in the media to look at how their bodies have changed since the year 1900. And what we found is this is the largest discrepancy ever. So that means what average women look like versus what women in the media look like is the biggest discrepancy we've ever had in recorded history. And so that leaves the average American woman feeling not very good about themselves. We have a term for it called normative discontent, but it's really what they're feeling about their bodies. They're just feeling like they don't match up. If we move to the next slide, this is kind of a landmark study in the area of body image. And what these researchers did is they looked at all the Miss Americas and all the Playmate centerfolds from the year 1959 to 1996. So you can see it's kind of an old study now. But this is what's so interesting about this study. In the year 1996, what they found is 60% of the Miss America contestants and 69% of the Playmates met the criteria for anorexia based on their height. And so it's even so much worse now. And now with the Miss America pageants, you know, they have boot camps that the women are required to go to and where they're required to, you know, not forced to lose weight, but they're strongly encouraged to lose weight. And then what we found in the cases of Miss Texas, it's happened in Florida where these women have then gained back some of that weight and pageant officials have asked them to lose that weight. And so it's a very sad phenomenon that's going on. If you go down to the next slide, it's entitled Models That Have Died. And unfortunately, there's a lot of cases of actresses, of models that are passing away from eating disorders. And we really don't even know the recorded rates of women passing away from eating disorders. We know that anorexia has the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric illness, but we really don't know the rates of women passing away from bulimia. In fact, I'm working with a number of parents that are trying to lobby that these rates get recorded, but right now with medical examiners, if your loved one passes away from bulimia, it's often not recorded on the death certificate, and we've had a lot of families that this has been the case. So we know the models are killing themselves to look like this. We know it's not a natural thing for them. You can see some of these other images I have of on, you know, the celebrity magazines and different things. But if you're able to see the next slide, you'll see a very, very young girl. And she is very young, and when I show this picture, a lot of people ask, well, where did you get this? What is this? And it's actually an 11-year-old girl, and it's from the French Vogue magazine. And when this first came out, I thought it was maybe a joke. I didn't really understand what was going on. But I think a lot of the problem is they're not finding women that are accurate sizes. And so even using younger and younger models. If you go to the next slide, you'll probably recognize Nicole Kidman in the white suit. You may not know who the young woman is there that's wearing the bikini top and she's in a yellow skirt. Her name is actually Garen, and she was the youngest runway model here in the U.S. A few years ago. And this is her when she was 12 years old and already 6 feet tall. And there's a documentary called America the Beautiful where they talk about Garen. And it's quite sad that when Garen went through puberty and her hips actually widened, that she was no longer thin enough to be a model and was actually not working anymore. And so it's kind of sad that this is what we're turning to is 12-year-old girls to be the image of beauty. Now, Nicole Kidman, I want to chat about for a minute, and if you go to my next slide, it's actually the Inquirer, and it says Nicole's secret medical diets, and I promise I do not, or Nicole's secret medical tests, it says, and I promise I do scholarly research, and I don't just look at the National Enquirer, but what turned out with Nicole Kidman is she was actually diagnosed with osteoporosis, and this is a big problem for a lot of the patients I work with. And a lot of teenage girls that I work with that may not have eating disorders, but that may diet and they develop osteopenia from their dieting. And so many of my patients have the bones of 80-year-old women. They have very fragile, brittle bones from all the dieting. And so again, you do not just have to have an eating disorder, but you can also just be a chronic dieter and really weaken your bones. And so for any of you that have seen the movie Moulin Rouge, Nicole Kidman, when she did that movie, they still felt like she wasn't thin enough. And you can look at her frame, and she's a very, very thin woman. They felt like she wasn't thin enough, and as they do in a lot of movies, they put a corset on her that was so tight that by her own report, she said that it cracked several of her ribs. If you go down to the next one, you'll see Jennifer Aniston on the cover of People, and this is an old People magazine, and it's How Thin Is Too Thin. And Jennifer Aniston made headlines. She's a beautiful, beautiful woman, and she had to maintain her body quite a bit when she was doing the show Friends. And we're going to talk about later, I'll show you a different slide, that when she was doing the show Friends, that she wasn't even technically thin enough to be on the cover of Red Book magazine. But back when she was doing the show Friends, it was reported by her celebrity fitness trainer, Kathy Kaler, who you've maybe heard of, she's a well-known celebrity fitness trainer, that she no longer could work with Jennifer Aniston, that what she felt Jennifer Aniston was doing was too intense. And by her own report, she was having to exercise up to 8 hours a day to maintain that body. And we'll talk about how that body wasn't good enough, again, to be on the cover of a magazine. Go to this next slide. It's a dark slide. You may not really understand it. You may not be able to see it very well. A patient of mine actually ripped this out of the page, out of the Vogue magazine years ago. And Anna on the background on the screen, so there's a screen with Anna. Anna, by the way, is not the fashion designer. And it's actually kind of pro-anorexia. And then down we see the model looking at a can of cashew nuts. Now, in my generation, when I had an eating disorder, I cared a lot about cashew nuts because I was very concerned about fat grams, and I would have focused in on that. This new generation of eating disorders, my patients always talk about carbs or trans fats. They wouldn't be concerned as much about cashew nuts. And then we see a monster mask. And so what this ad is really doing is really soliciting women with eating disorders to kind of buy this product. And so if you're not aware of pro eating disorder websites or pro eating disorder kind of advertisements, especially as a parent you need to be, or especially as a person that may be struggling with an eating disorder and you're seeking out information or treatment. I did a story a couple years back with Fox News, and they were recording me as I was Googling eating disorder treatment, and it was so interesting. As I just put the search terms in, eating disorder treatment, on the first page of results, it pulled up 3 pro eating disorder websites. And these eating disorder websites are really designed to teach your loved ones or to teach you how to do your eating disorder better, to show that it's not really a mental illness, that it's a way of life, it's a choice, it's a lifestyle, and they could teach you tricks and tips on how to do your eating disorder better. A couple years ago, one of my patients was spotlighted by the E! Channel, E! News, and that they did a story on her because her pro eating disorder site had the most hits of any other site. And, you know, this young woman is now recovered from her eating disorder. But when she was in treatment, she talked about how she was so miserable herself. She hated herself so bad that she wanted other people to suffer. And so she created these websites trying to punish other people. And so I really want to put a strong warning about these websites, that the creator of the site may not be in a good place. The other thing we found is a lot of creators of these sites are men, and they are pretending to be young girls. They're soliciting images for young girls and basically using these images for pornography purposes. So the sites are very dangerous, and really, again, I caution people from these sites. And now these sites are everywhere. Pinterest has tried to pull all the sites. Yahoo has tried to pull the sites, but they keep regenerating under new names, and it's really hard to manage them. If we continue going with my presentation now, you'll see a slide that says bigger is better, skinny is scary. But we all kind of know what happens when celebrities gain weight or when we gain weight. We're teased. And I have some images of some celebrities that have gained weight and were really criticized. And Jessica Simpson got all the way up to a size 6 and was just hounded by the media. Questions about if she was pregnant, if she was letting herself go. And so we see again that celebrities struggle just like the rest of us. This next slide, you'll see an oversized Barbie doll sitting on a couch. And I love this. It says there are 3 billion women who don't look like supermodels and only 8 who do. You'll never see this ad again because actually the Body Shop was sued by Mattel for creating this ad because Mattel obviously did not like that they made Barbie fat. But if you go to the next slide, there's some current people that feel like the current Barbie needs to be slimmed down. And if we look from when Barbie was created, we do see these thinner and thinner images of Barbie coming out. And so I do groups with my patients on childhood images. We talk about Barbie dolls. We watch clips of Disney films and how characters are portrayed. And it's so fascinating because so many of my patients say, well, I wanted to look like a Barbie. I've had a patient's mom tell me she wanted her daughter to look like Barbie and she was pursuing plastic surgery for her daughter to have her look like Barbie. And I have girls telling me how they've wanted to look like their Disney princesses. My daughter's 12 years old, but a few years ago, it was probably 6 years ago now, I had a Halloween party for her and all her friends, and the girls all came so cute, dressed in their costumes, and one of the little girls came in, and she was dressed in a princess costume, and she asked me if I had safety pins. And I said, yeah, you know, sweetie, why do you need safety pins? And she says, well, my waist is too large in this costume. I need you to pin it back and make it look tighter. I don't look like Cinderella or whoever she was. And I just thought, oh, it's so sad. And so I do talk to the patients about that. If you go to the next slide, you can see a young girl. She's actually recovered from an eating disorder, and she made what Barbie would look like if she was a real person, and this is just, you know, her thoughts on it. I just thought it was really kind of cute. Researchers have actually looked at how playing with Barbie dolls have impacted girls, and what researchers have found is girls aged 5 to 7 years old reported less body esteem and a greater desire for a thinner body after exposure to Barbies compared to girls that saw images of dolls with a more healthy body size, and they used the Emmy doll in that. And again, we could think, well, these are just dolls. They can't affect our children, our daughters. But it's that repeated exposure over and over to these images that really normalizes these images for us, and we really start to think that that's how we're supposed to look. So unfortunately, the models can't look like this. No one can look like this. And so that's why we do a lot of airbrushing now. And so I think it's critical for our daughters, for our wives, even for the men listening. I'll be talking about how so many of the images, basically all of the images we're seeing now, are airbrushed, or they've been altered, or they've been computer generated. And, again, that these images become normal, and young girls believe that these images are normal. I love the one, if you can see the one of Katie Couric. This is when she started hosting the nightly news. And Katie Couric's recovered from bulimia, which she's been open about talking about her history with this. And so when they airbrushed her down for all the promotional material, she was a little upset, and she asked, you know, I really don't want to be airbrushed down. I'd really like you to represent how I naturally look. Well, they didn't feel she looked good enough, and so Katie Couric wasn't even powerful enough to stop her images from being airbrushed, and all her promotional material went out being airbrushed. You can see these other images of Mariah Carey, obviously, the airbrushed image is just the perfect image. And then have images of Faith Hill. Again, you can see just her arms, her face, her waist, just all the subtle small changes they do to make the image look perfect. Again, Kelly Clarkson showing the images. The next image is showing the changes in the face, how they can just remove all our pores, all our blemishes, everything. This one of the Kardashians showing, you know, not only did she lose the baby weight after airbrushing, that the baby even looks a little bit different. So it can really show the changes they can do. The one with the Ralph Lauren model. Now, this one you may have heard about because it gained a lot of attention. She was actually on the Today Show. I watched an interview with her. Now, the images you see on your PowerPoint, both have been airbrushed. But the image with her in the blue jeans and the plaid top was even more airbrushed. And I believe it was for an ad in Japan. And so they really wanted her thinned down. But after they airbrushed her and airbrushed her so thin, I think she just doesn't even look normal anymore, they fired her. They felt she was too big and she didn't really represent the image they were portraying. And she was angry about it. She'd been a model with Ralph Lauren for several years and really felt like it was unfair. If you can go to the next slide now. This is a copy of the USA Today and talking about some of the airbrushing lawsuits. And you can see the cover of Jennifer Aniston there on Red Book Magazine. And this was the cover that Jennifer Aniston was pretty upset about. It was back when she was married to Brad Pitt, and so her wedding ring is on her hand. But the picture was completely altered and airbrushed along with Julia Roberts and Kate Winslet. And you can see Kate Winslet's picture was completely altered. And so these women were pretty upset. They felt like this was misleading to the public. And so they decided to do something about it, and they wanted to sue the publishers of these magazines and really say that, you know, you cannot alter our images. This isn't right. But if you remember back what happened, they weren't successful in their pursuits. And it was really deemed by the court that all of us in the general public are aware that all of these images are fake and that they've been altered. And so since we're all aware of that, and since these are all just kind of works of art, that the publishers can really do whatever they want with these images. But unfortunately, I don't think the majority of people are aware that these images aren't real and that these images are manipulated. And so it was, you know, a sad thing. And I think it was just 2 years ago that Newsweek did a whole article about all the airbrushing, and that there were a lot of people proposing that they just wanted little kind of labels on the bottom of these ads, kind of like cigarette ads, you know, with the warning labels. They wanted warning labels just letting people know that these images have been airbrushed, these images aren't real. But here's the saddest thing for me. A recent study just came out 2 months ago, was looking at educating women on airbrushing and that these images aren't real, and seeing how these, if it still impacted women if they knew the images weren't real. And what they found is, even if we know that these images aren't real, they're still very upsetting to us. So, and that's what I'm going to be talking about in some later slides, is how triggering and upsetting these images can be. The next slide I have is with Julia Roberts on the cover of the Pretty Woman, you know, DVD or VHS back in the day of what it was. And so I think you're all probably kind of fairly aware now, guessing that that is not Julia Roberts' body on the cover, which it is not. But if you've seen the movie, it's not her body in a lot of the clips of the movie as well. They use body doubles. And that is now a common thing. It happens in most movies, that not stunt doubles, but we now have body doubles. So so that we can have the perfect arms, the perfect legs, the perfect looking woman in every single scene. I went to California for my undergraduate degree, and one of my best friends, this is over 20 years ago, she was a model in San Francisco, and she was featured in over 350 ads, but it was never her body. She was an arm and a leg model. So basically, her arms or her legs were featured in 350 ads, but never her whole body. They didn't think she looked good enough. And so we've been doing this a long, long time, and that's why with movies now it's just standard practice. They don't think a whole lot of it, but I think, you know, the public does need to know. Again, when you're comparing yourself, knowing that you're probably seeing five women, not one woman. Demi Moore is the next picture I have, and when she was on this cover, and you know, Demi Moore has had a really bad year and has, you know, had reports of eating disorders and drug addictions and lots of things going on in her life. But the reason this ad made such attention is because they had airbrushed her so much that they didn't put her full hip back on. And, you know, I think it's so sad. Demi Moore talks about, you know, when she did the movie Charlie's Angel, Full Throttle, how much she had to do to her body to prepare for that role, and that she still didn't feel like it was good enough. And then she does this cover, and they airbrush her down so much. And so, again, you have to imagine how these celebrities must feel for them, too, never feeling good enough. So if we look at the impact of the media, we see that children view 6 hours and 32 minutes of media per day. The average child, now 68% of them have televisions in their room, but over a three-year period, we found that disordered eating was three times higher if girls had televisions in their room. So again, just by having a television in their room, it was leading to disordered eating. Teenage girls report 18 hours per week of watching television. I just watched a documentary on the media, and they're estimating now that teenage girls are connected to the internet or technology 19 hours a day, which I have a teenage daughter, and I wouldn't say it was 19 hours a day, but she's constantly checking her phone, checking for updates, you know, just always connected to that technology. We see that teenage girls spend 4.3 hours a week reading fashion magazines. This is an older study, and I don't think as many girls look at fashion magazines now, but I think they spend a lot of time online looking at images. After only 3 minutes of looking at fashion magazines, 70% of women feel more depressed, guilty, and shameful. And we have found that girls that read fashion magazines are six times higher for disordered eating. I was actually one of the first researchers in the country to expose women with eating disorders in a controlled experiment to see how looking at fashion magazines impacted them. And my results, I found that their anxiety went up, their depression went up, their body hatred went up just from looking at images. So these images are highly triggered. And it's estimated that the average person sees anywhere to 400 to 600 of these images a day, and that they are highly triggering. I want to talk to you about the Fiji study for a minute. And this is a kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing with Dr. Ann Becker was able to do. She's a sociologist out of Harvard, and she's been studying the women of Fiji for decades. And the women of Fiji were going to, Fiji itself was going to finally get our Western satellite systems. So what that meant was for the first time ever, they were going to be able to watch on television what we watch. And she looked at the women of Fiji in 1995, and she asked them if they wanted to lose weight, how they felt about their bodies. 90% of the women in Fiji said they felt very happy about their bodies. They had no desire to lose weight. And actually, the average BMI in Fiji in 1995 was a 29. And if we look at, put that in perspective, the obesity BMI is at 30. So women were curvy, voluptuous, they liked their bodies. And there were really no recordable, diagnosable rates of eating disorders in 1995. Well, by 1998, 38 months after television was introduced, she basically found the same equivalent rates of eating disorders in Fiji as she could find in Manhattan. So basically, after just 3 years of watching television, they had the same rates of eating disorders as we did. They also found that their crime rates went up amongst the young men. Drugs and violence also increased. And I don't want anyone to think that I believe the media causes eating disorders, because I don't. But what I do believe is the cause of eating disorders is very complex, and we can obviously look at temperament and genetics and some other things that, that play into play when we look at the development of eating disorders. But I think for some people, the media can be that extra trigger. It can be the little, kind of the straw that breaks the camel's back and moves women over to eating disorders. But that Fiji study is an interesting study. I want to talk about plastic surgery now to kind of shift gears a little bit, because so many of my patients obsess about plastic surgery. They want plastic surgery, or they've had plastic surgery done. And you can see images I've provided. If we look at some of the stats, we can look at the, and these were, you know, these are posted by, you know, the American Plastic Surgery Academy, but you can really look from 1992 to 2010, breast implants are up 921%. Liposuction's up 431%. And upper arm lifts, so ladies, when we wave our arms, we don't have the flags, they're up almost 3,000%. I didn't want any of the men to feel left out, but if you look at what men are having done, calf implants, pec implants, so again, sending the message that we're not good enough and we need to always be improving our body. I don't know if you've seen this little book that came out. You can get it on Amazon. It's at Barnes & Noble, and it's called My Beautiful Mommy. It was actually written by a plastic surgeon to be able to explain to young kids why mom was going in for her mommy makeover, you know, why she was going to be in the hospital, why she was going to have bandages wrapped around her body. So I brought a page out of the book that I have up on the PowerPoint, but the page right before was a little girl saying, basically, Mommy, I love you just the way you are. And this is mom's response. That's sweet of you to say, my love, but mommy is also having her tummy made smaller. You see, as I got older, my body stretched and I couldn't fit into my clothes anymore. Dr. Michael is going to help me fix that and make me feel better. And again, I just think it's kind of a sad place where we're at, that we're kind of teaching our daughters that we're not okay and that we need to constantly be changing our bodies. If you go to this next slide, this is what women in China are doing. And a lot of times when I talk about this to parents and my patients, they're appalled that women in China could be purposely breaking their legs. And that's really what they're doing. They're breaking their legs, and then they get basically these halos put on where the screws go through their bones. This is a 9-month procedure, where they're basically stretching out the space between the bones so new bone can grow back, and that they can gain 2 to 3 inches in height. I have a little neighbor girl that had to have this done due to a genetic condition she had, and they only did one leg at a time. And when her mom would turn the screws in her leg, she would scream so loudly that I could hear her from my house. And so, again, it seems like how barbaric, but when I look at what women in the U.S. are doing to themselves, I wonder, is it that different? So I want to talk about the diet industry for a moment, because we can't escape it. We now know that in a regular period, and that's a course of a year, 90% of all women diet. For men, it's anywhere from 47% to 72% of men diet in a year's period. Here's the bad news about diets. 90% of all diets fail after 1 year. 98% of all diets fail after 5 years. Some recent meta-analysis are showing that not only are all the dieters regaining all the weight they lost, plus another 10%, but some meta-analysis are showing that it's a lot more than 10%. And so we really know that diets don't work, but we're still sold that belief. When we look at children dieting, we don't have a lot of up-to-date stats. I'm going to give you these stats, but I'm going to give you the year associated with the statistic. So in 2006, we had 14% of 5-year-old girls dieting. In 1999, and you see these stats quoted over and over and over, but really this statistic is from the year 1999. We have 50% of 9-year-old girls dieting, 80% of 10-year-old girls dieting. By the time girls reach high school, we have 90% of girls dieting. And young girls are more afraid of becoming fat than they are of nuclear war, cancer, or losing a parent. And when we look at kind of dissatisfaction, we have 75% of girls feeling like they need to lose weight. One of the most alarming statistics is 76% of girls and women admit to unhealthy activities when they feel bad about their bodies. This study actually found that these unhealthy activities included binging, restricting, purging, abusing laxatives. So again, that statistic is alarming when you think about what these girls could be doing. These next studies I'm going to talk about, I think, really reinforce how dieting is not helpful. If we look at this study by Stice and all, they looked at 700 girls over a 4-year period. Girls that dieted in 9th grade were 3 times more likely to be overweight by 12th grade. Another study by Field and colleagues, they looked at 15,000 teenagers. They found girls who dieted frequently were 12 times more likely to binge eat than non-dieters, 12 times more likely just by dieting. Stice and all, they looked at 1,000 high school girls over a 4-year period. They found their initial dietary restraint score strongly predicted the onset of depression 4 years later. So basically, the more girls were dieting, the more they depressed they got. And I think anyone that's went on a diet can relate to that. I developed my eating disorder because I'm a highly anxious person. I was a perfectionist, and my eating disorder really helped bring down my anxiety. Instead of focusing on solving the world's problems or getting straight A's, I just had to focus on my weight and how, you know, how many calories I was going to eat. But then over time, I developed depression. So I started out with one problem. I ended up with 3. And so that's what I see with so many of my patients, is we get this snowball effect. And if we look at how people are dieting or how diet targets us, this next slide I have just really shows diet ads in women's magazines versus men's magazines. And we can see that women are definitely targeted more, but I really believe that's changing. A recent study found, though, that if people are dieting and they view diet ads, it actually makes them eat 2 times more than the control group. So here we have majority of people dieting. We're surrounded by diet ads, but it's making us eat more, not less. And some researchers are actually looking at now, for any of you that are from California or some other parts of the country where they're now putting the calories on the menus, they're finding that initially that made people eat less knowing the calories, but now a lot of people are eating more now that they're knowing the calories. They kind of are giving up. So it'll be interesting to see what that research looks like. So we really see the diagnosis of eating disorders increasing significantly. We see the onset happening around age 13 or around the age 18. One out of every four college-age women has an eating disorder. 8 out of 10 college-age women have disordered eating. And like I said earlier, anorexia has the highest mortality rate. I want to briefly talk about intuitive eating. This is a system here we do at the Center for Change, and we were one of the first in the country to do it with an eating disorder population. And I have to admit, when I came to work at the Center for Change, I was fully recovered from my eating disorder, but I was by no means an intuitive eater, and I really did not believe in intuitive eating. And so it's been really helpful for me to learn these concepts, and I fully embraced it now. And there's lots of wonderful books. You can actually go to our website and find some books on intuitive eating that if you're struggling with your weight or struggling with binge eating or dieting, that they might be really helpful for you. But these are some of the tenets of intuitive eating. And so, again, no scales, no measuring cups, and no weighing ourselves. But it is important for people to learn portion sizes. So all of our patients are put on meal plans. They learn accurate portion sizes. I was working with this adorable 12-year-old little boy on an outpatient basis that was being bullied by his weight. He was very depressed. He was overweight. And I asked him, I was having him kind of do a food journal for me, and I asked him, well, how many bowls of cereal do you eat in the morning? He told me that he ate 3. Well, when I had his mom actually measure it out, he was eating 12. So it was very important for me to have him work with a dietitian to learn normal portion sizes. And again, the second component is no label reading, no calorie counting. Well, I work with a lot of diabetic patients, so of course they're going to have to do some of that. But when I was in my eating disorder, the grocery store was a two-hour adventure for me because I would read every label. So teaching people to get away from reading all those labels, unless you have a medical condition or some reason you need to be reading those labels. Never dieting again. I think I talked about that. No good and bad foods. I don't label food as junk food in my house. I teach my kids that all food can be good in moderation, but that we have to eat a variety, and that I need to, as a parent, present a variety of food to my kids. So if my son's eating a whole bunch of Cheetos, I say, okay, you've had a lot of Cheetos, let's move to a different food group. So again, I'm not saying that's junk food, don't eat that, but really having a variety and offering a variety of food. Exercise you enjoy. Well, I was a runner in my eating disorder, but the truth is I hate running. You'll never catch me running again, unless someone's chasing me, of course. And so I think it's critical to find exercise you enjoy. Exercise with your kids. Go on walks. Go on bike rides. And then the next one is monitoring and learning your hunger fullness. We found in the research that if people have been overeaters, if they've been binge eaters, it takes 3 months of normal eating for them to get their hunger cues back. Same if people have been restrictors and anorexics. They're not normally going to just naturally learn their hunger fullness. And so that's a process and that's a concept. So using meal plans and structured meals can be very critical for these patients, but that I also like them to, they can be intuitive about their choices of what they need to eat, but not the amounts of food they need to eat, that they need to still kind of have a structured meal plan. And then the final one is we really teach our patients to eat 3 meals a day, and I really like my patients to eat 3 snacks a day. I'm going to move to my last slide and just talk about prevention. And we've talked about some of these in the presentation, but I'll highlight a few of them. The first one is kind of fight fatism. And I think for all of us to stop labeling our own body parts as fat, to stop looking in the mirror and saying, oh, I just look fat today, stop asking our husbands if we look fat in our jeans, that we just need to stop having those conversations with ourselves and about others. I think women, we can be so critical of other women, and to stop commenting on if other people have gained weight, to stop talking about that, oh, she hasn't lost that baby weight yet, or to stop even commenting if people have lost weight, to comment on the person as a whole, not on their appearance. I think I've talked a lot about questioning the media, and so everyone, I think, hopefully now kind of knows to question the media. But then three, to accept our genetics. I used to want my mom's genetics. I used to want my best friend's genetics. So I really talk to my patients about we can't diet out of our genetics, and to really start accepting our own body and how our own body wants to look. And then four, to kind of fight the diet downfall, to really know that diets over time are going to make us gain weight. All the research shows that. I really compare it to the smoking industry 40 years ago. Everyone knew smoking was not good for us, but we kept on promoting it, and that's how I feel like the diet industry is. And then five, understanding that emotions are skin deep. If you would ask me in my eating disorder why I had one, I would have said I didn't want to be fat. I would have told you I wanted to lose weight, and as soon as I had my body the way I wanted it, I would feel better. Well, I really didn't want to look at the fact that I was feeling insecure. I didn't like myself. I was struggling with self-esteem issues, and so really realizing that eating disorders and body image problems are not about our bodies. They're deeper issues going on inside. And again, a lot of my patients really feel like it's just about their bodies. And then six, befriending your body. I really try to work with women on doing what they want to do now. Not waiting till they lose 10 pounds to go on their favorite vacation or to start dating or to go to the prom, that they need to do it now to start nurturing their body, being kind to their body, buying new clothes now. I have so many patients say, I'm not buying new clothes until I lose weight. Buy new clothes now. Take care of yourself now. And so I think that's a message that I really want women to just start enjoying life now. Quit putting life on hold. And then the final one is to form an identity outside of your body. I work with a lot of athletes. I work with a lot of dancers. I work with models, different people that their body is really critical on their future. And so teaching them, though, that they can have an identity outside of their body, that there's other things fabulous about them, that there's other reasons why people like them, and that they don't have to be dependent on that body to get all their worth. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening to my presentation. And I'll kind of turn it over. I think it's time for us to do the survey.
Thank you, Dr. Hawkins. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Question 1. This session provided me with a better understanding of influences from the media on body image. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. And we'll pause momentarily to gather the responses. Question 2. This session educated me on ways to prevent negative body image. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. Again, we'll pause briefly to gather the responses. Question 3. Overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. strongly disagree. Question 4. I would recommend this program to others. Star 1, if you agree, or star 2, if you do not agree. I would recommend this program to others. Star 1, agree. Star 2, if you do not agree. And finally, question 5. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with an eating disorder. Star 1, I am an individual with an eating disorder. Star 2, I am a family member of someone with an eating disorder. Star 3, I am a health professional. Star 4, other. Thank you for your responses. We will now address your questions. If you would like to pose a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are on a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate when your line is open. Please state your name before posing your question. Again, that is star 1 to pose a question. We'll pause briefly to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And as a reminder, star 1 to pose your telephone question. Currently, there are no questions in the queue. I'll turn the conference back to Ms. Harner for any additional remarks.
Thank you. Thanks to everyone for attending today, and thank you especially to Dr. Nicole Hawkins for providing such wonderful insights. If you have any specific questions about any of the therapies discussed today, please contact the Eating Disorder team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please also be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Eating Disorder Awareness Seminar next month on Tuesday, October 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern, that's noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific time. Thanks, everyone, for joining us, and have a great day.
And that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation.